I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin joining us right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Gentleman who works for the Sporting News. He's an NBA draft analyst. We're really happy to have him this close to the draft. He's Chris Stone. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
We think we're doing okay. But before we dive into specific guys, New Orleans trading with the Lakers, getting the fourth pick, and then maybe moving it along and everything else, it sounds all convoluted. But in theory, we think it could help the Cavaliers if it frees up a guy like Darius Garland, who teams behind the Cavaliers might have an interest in. How can you see this benefiting Cleveland, or do you not?
It certainly could. Convoluted is a great term to use when thinking about what might happen with the fourth pick. Obviously, there are a ton of rumors that New Orleans is shopping the pick and looking potentially to add someone who can be impactful immediately. What that means in terms of who will go there, I think, is a little bit open. Now, the good news for Cleveland, I think, is that whether that pick gets traded to somebody who wants a point guard like Darius Garland or gets traded to someone who is rumored to like Jarrett Culver, like Atlanta, I think that there should still be a good option available for Cleveland at five. It's just that I don't think we know yet who exactly that option will be until we figure out what happens with New Orleans at four, because that pick is in such flux right now.
Give me the scoop on Cam Reddish, will you? I mean, I look here and there, you know, I think back to the beginning of the college basketball season. And I'm like, man, this guy's got it going on. This guy's got a shot to be, you know, one of the top picks. And now every time I look at another mock draft, he just keeps dropping. I'm looking at him at eight right now. Where is he going to land? How is this? I'm just wondering how much of it's smoke to move him down or if it's legit.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anybody had the full scoop on Reddish, they'd be making a lot more money. he's one of the most difficult prospects to figure out in the draft. And I do think there's a reason that he's dropping. And that's just that he had a poor freshman season at Duke. He entered the year as somebody who many thought could be the most talented player in the class, a candidate to be the number one pick. But he got to Duke and he really settled into a role behind R.J. Barrett, behind Zion Williamson, and didn't see as much of the ball. Most of the reason he was ranked highly coming out of high school was his ability to act basically as a point forward, and he didn't get to do that at Duke. And when he got the opportunity to do it at Duke, he wasn't particularly good at it. He had more turnovers than assists, shot worse than 40% from two. Those are two of the reasons I think he's sliding down boards. But, you know, he's still considered a lottery pick because we have this high school tape that suggests he can be good. And with the quality of players in this draft, there's still reasons to take risks on him somewhere in that top 10.
On your big board, you have Brandon Clark from Gonzaga sitting there. Gonzaga, sorry, Andy, sitting there at number five. And as you say, Chris, presumably higher than any NBA team will have Clark on their final draft board. And you said it requires some justification, and then you justify it. Could you see a team jumping up and taking him that high?
I don't think so. I think that NBA teams are willing to wait on Clark, and frankly, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes outside of the lottery, or at least slightly outside of the lottery on draft night. Clark is someone who, from the standpoint of NBA teams, doesn't really meet the thresholds of things that they're looking for, right? He's got a wingspan that is equal to his height. That is a big no-no for elite prospects, right? We want guys who are long, athletic, and stuff like that. Now, the reason I buy into Clark is because he is that elite-level functional athlete. He's one of the best leapers in the class, despite being 6'8", and one of, you know, somebody who we project to be a big at the next level. So I think it would be incredibly surprising if Clark goes that high. I think that some team would do well to take him that high. I just don't think that they will.
Chris Stone joining us, NBA draft analyst for the Sporting News. If you're Kobe Altman, you're John Beilein, you're sitting there on draft night, what's your perfect scenario?
For me, if I'm the Cavs, I think that I'm hoping that Jarrett Culver falls to five. I think Culver is the fourth best prospect in the draft. I think he's a really interesting talent. I think that the gap between him and R.J. Barrett at three is not significant. Culver has, you know, he's a year older, but he has some statistics that suggest that he's got some untapped potential, particularly the number of steals that he generates gives us a hint that he has a pretty high basketball IQ. I think that he would pair really nicely in the backcourt there with Colin Sexton. I think that the Cavs are in a tough spot. On the other hand, Darius Garland falls to five, and now they're looking at probably the best prospect on the board and having to make a decision, you know, about what they're going to do with the point guard position in the future.
What's the worst case scenario?
Garland at five situation. And I don't mean that from it would be bad if they ended up with, say, Darius Garland or DeAndre Hunter or something like that. I think the Cavs will get a useful player at five. I just think that putting Garland in play at five makes the situation really difficult because you have to start to think about how you're going to allocate your assets, right? Is it worth spending a high first-round pick 2 years in a row on a point guard? I'm not sure if it is. And if it's not, then it means you're passing on someone like Darius Garland, who a lot of teams really like. Now, maybe you parlay that out as getting a player you want and not having to think about having two point guards, but it just makes the decision-making a little more difficult if that's the scenario they end up.
How about this? We've heard a couple of rumblings, and let me bounce a couple of things off you. One sure. trade thing that was thrown out there that we saw earlier today, Chicago wanting a point guard and maybe Garland, trading up to the Cavs for five. It would be the Cavs sending Jordan Clarkson and the fifth pick to Chicago for Zach LaVine in the seventh. Thoughts?
Yeah. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad deal. I think that the Cavs probably get the better end of that. LaVine's obviously a useful player. I think that there's not a big gap between five and seven in terms of talent. You know, you could drop down to seven and take somebody like DeAndre Hunter, an incredibly useful 3-and-D forward who can guard multiple positions, is one of the best defenders in the draft. So, you know, I don't think that that would be a bad position for Cleveland at all.
How about this one? Atlanta at 8-10, trading up for five.
Yeah. If you can get 8-10, sounds great to me.
You'd do that. You would do that?
I would. I think that the gap in player quality between the fifth best player in this draft and, say, the 10th or 12th best player in this draft is not significant. And so if you were able to get two of those picks and get two bites at the proverbial apple to find someone who you like, I think that that's something I would be pretty attracted by.
As you know, the Cavs have a later pick in the first round. Bol Bol, will he be around when the Cavs pick 25?
I think it's certainly possible that he'll be around.
Six, sorry.
26, yeah.
Yeah, 26,
I think it's likely that he may be there. I think his draft stock spans the spectrum from people who like him in the late lottery to people who don't think he's a first-rounder. He is obviously an incredibly talented player, has some of the best offensive highlights you'll see, given that he's 7'2", can occasionally dribble like a guard and knock down pull-up three-pointers. But there are a ton of questions there associated with how he's going to fit in defensively in the NBA and whether or not his work ethic off the court will allow him to reach his ceiling.
How active and crazy do you think Atlanta's going to be on draft night with six picks?
Yeah.
I think they're going to be pretty active. It would not surprise me to see them make multiple trades on draft night. I can't imagine that they want to enter the season with six rookies on their roster or even, you know, in the G League or on two-way contracts and stuff like that. So I think that they are likely to be active and trying to move up and down. Now, whether they're successful, we'll have to see.
All right, what's the John Beilein factor, too, when it comes to the Cavaliers and having a first-year head coach who is so, you know, creative in making guys who are just below blue chip into blue chip players in college? How will that translate into the pros, and how would that affect them in the draft?
Sure. The question I don't think we know the answer to is how much influence he's going to have over who gets selected. My guess would be nothing, but I'm saying that speculatively and not without any information there. But it just seems hard for someone to come in that late in the process to be able to dictate, you know, who's getting selected where. I think that the good news is that, like you said, Beilein's creative and has a history of making guys work out. And so I think that whoever they end up with, he can find a way to fit them into the system that he wants and find ways to make them succeed. I think that that's, you know, I thought that was a good hire by the Cavs, take a shot on somebody new. And he's somebody that I like because, like you mentioned, he just has a habit of getting the best out of his players.
If you were in the Cavs situation, would you think of trading that fifth pick for an established NBA player? Or would you take a young guy and go?
as a fan of the draft, I have a habit of taking the young guys and going and sort of trying to rebuild on the fly like that. So I think that that's where my tendencies lie. I also think that there's such value in having guys on cost-controlled deals when it comes to building your roster that I tend to want to pick the guys with potential who could fill out and in a couple of years be useful but still on cheap contracts.
Chris Stone joining us, NBA draft analyst for the Sporting News. And Chris has a real, real comprehensive piece out on his top 60 guys in this draft. I suggest you go to the Sporting News and read it. If you're looking, and I am in this, I think the Cavs have to get the guy with the highest ceiling. And I keep, you know, all along I've thought Culver, and I know you have Culver there too, of those guys. But Cam Reddish, and Andy asked you about him, keeps coming back into my thought. Which guy has the lowest ceiling? Which guy do you think might be, you know, an average NBA player and nothing more out of the crew that seems to be there for the Cavaliers? And that would be Garland and Culver, Hunter, Reddish, and maybe even throw in Kobe White.
So I think that the most likely just sort of good, solid, mediocre piece with not a ton of upside is DeAndre Hunter, which is not to say Hunter won't be a good pro. I think that it's very likely that he's a useful rotation piece. It's just that I don't know that he has the creation ability to be scorer offensively. But if he can be a 3-and-D shooter who shoots off of movement, who defends multiple positions, that's obviously valuable. Reddish is the guy who sort of pops into my head next, but that's mostly because I think he has a ton of downside associated with some of the things we discussed earlier. And so, you know, if you're looking for like median outcomes, I think it's DeAndre Hunter. If you're looking for the biggest risk, I think it's Reddish.
And maybe the biggest payoff?
I mean, Reddish might be the biggest payoff too, right? Even if 1-2% chance of reaching the ceiling that we talked about, most talented player in the class, 6'9" point forward who can shoot it and pass it and initiate your offense. Like, those are the types of guys who make deep playoff runs. But, you know, like I said, I just, 1% chance that he hits that. And so you have to sort of start to balance your risks and figure out what the expected value of those prospects is.
Chris, thanks a bunch for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Look forward to seeing what happens coming up on Thursday.
Hey, thank you all for having me, and I hope you have a great day.
You
got it. Chris Stone from the Sporting News joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.